What did they serve Ozzy at Charlie Wrangle's party?
They served
regret.
Regret and chutzpah.
No regret.
I don't think they
no
serve
remorse.
Regret.
Regret, but no remorse.
You think regret, remorse?
A tiny
loyalty, heavy dose of loyalty.
A tiny smear of regret that was overshadowed by chutzpah and Dionne Warwick singing live, which I've never been exposed to before.
Large plates of rubber chicken with chutzpah.
There was rubber chicken, French fries, fried chicken, and then there was like this like these vegetables, like baby carrots, corn, like all this like stuff that I'd never really seen.
You make
before.
baby carrots and corn sound exotic.
Do you see what I normally eat? You know, they
mashed potatoes.
Yeah,
they have collard greens. I mean, was this sort of
no.
like a southern
good,
inspired?
This counts. This is part of the
this
show.
This counts.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, shouldn't we do that nominal thing? This is digesting politics for.
Go day. Finish it.
No.
Come on, Bob. This is Digesting Politics, and
for mid-August. You're
mid-August,
who?
Right. I'm Bob Henley.
I'm Ozzy Paber.
I'm Andrea Bernstein,
and I'm Brian Lehrer. And so, yeah. So we're digesting. Anything else before we get off that? We really want to know any other no interesting touch. Andrea asked collard greens. No other. It was just your standard rubber chicken 80th birthday party.
The food that was near where the reporters were sort of like the exotic kind that I like stared at. I had a plateful. I still don't know what it was, but it was good.
Are you talking about the baby carrots or something?
It was like
else?
Baby carrots, corn. There was like some like you know assortment of cream cheese. There was you know bread thing.
It
was
cream cheese for dinner.
Assortment
they
of cream
had,
cheese.
They had.
No wait, who came? No who? I Cuomo oh, came right.
Cuomo was there, Harrison. and he took this like unique entrance where he wouldn't go past reporters.
Unique.
Unique, as in not where people were expecting. And he's
unusual
had a,
for him? No.
No, no, no. He's done this before. I remember when Josh Robin of New York One and I were waiting for him outside of one of his own fundraisers, and he took this elaborate way, and he had his car move around and meet him just
That's
so he wouldn't talk to
That's known as the Houdini exit strategy.
Yes.
So no questions for Andrew Cuomo.
No. He got up. He gave a
What did
speech.
He say?
He basically focused all of his comments on Wrangle's past. Saying, oh, he was so great. In fact, he was so great that when Bill Clinton needed someone to push forward the urban agenda, he looked to Charles Wrangle. And he sort of like ignored the whole
that
concept.
Happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was all in the past tense.
It was. Now, there were other people who kind of came up and spoke. Inez Dickens, the city councilwoman from Charlie Wrangle's area, said, you know, Charlie, we want you to go to Washington for as long as you want to be there. So she sort of had like a forward looking thought.
Any of the candidates for attorney general?
Eric Schneiderman was there. Now, Now I was told that the attorney general candidates had all sort of said we have other things on our schedules and won't be attending. And then Schneiderman sort of made an appearance.
Did he speak, or did he just showed up?
He didn't speak, but he showed up and was acknowledged.
So
who parked his car?
That's a good question.
This raises an interesting question because at this forum at the Milano School, you were there, right, Ozzy? So the John Liu campaign argued that they were the, and I'm quoting them, the black candidate in the race for controller.
I see where you're going.
So I'm wondering, in the race for attorney general, is anybody positioning themselves as the black candidate, as sort of the candidate of the black community?
Well, actually, Schneiderman, when asked about the stop and frisk, remember that Governor Patterson decided to sign a bill which banned the NYPD from keeping further notice the names and personal information of people who they've stopped but not arrested or given a summons. During the debates that happened around that time for the Attorney General, Schneiderman particularly went beyond just endorsing that law and saying he wanted to see a real aggressive reassessment of the policy. So, and again, also one of the things he's been, and we also have to mention, I think at this point, that isn't his father on the board at WNYC also?
Oh, yes, Erwin Schneiderman.
Disclaimer. Right. Yes.
Brian, did you know this? That they were father
no,
and son?
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't know this either. I've known Erwin Schneiderman since the 90s, and I've known Eric Schneiderman since he was in politics, which is how long, Ozzy?
Long
city,
long
that's
time.
A small town.
Right? I did not know they were related until today. But anyway, they are. You're related.
Right, right.
They are related, as we
now
have all learned,
yes.
And now we
now
have
it's
to disclose.
A disclaimer.
Right. But what's fascinating about this is that he also, Schneiderman, Eric, is making a point of the fact that he really was in the leadership position of repealing or helping to push back the Rockefeller drug laws, which, as we know, for a long time, really many advocates would argue criminalized a generation of young men of color.
So Eric Schneiderman showing up at the Rangel fundraiser would be, or the dinner and fundraiser?
Dinner, fundraiser, birthday party, impromptu dance party.
Would be consistent with that positioning.
Right. Absolutely.
How are people going to decide who to vote for attorney general? I mean, there are five candidates in this race, and we're talking about a general public now, right? Primary elections tend to have low turnouts. The attorney general is not a position that the general public goes around thinking, gosh, I know exactly what I want in an attorney general. Never mind, I know what an attorney general does. And there are five people, yes?
Plug alert. They're going to decide after they hear the Brian Laird debate on Wednesday, September 8th at 11 a.m.
Good plug.
Live at the Green Space. After hearing the thoughtful discussion and their positions on the issues, Democratic primary voters will go to the polls the following Tuesday, knowing which candidate they most agree with and vote for them.
That was not a setup, by the way. So thank you. But, you know, when you look at these people, like even doing what I do for a living, there are several of these people who – I do have a sense of who they are and what they've done. Schneiderman, because he's, you know, a legislator from New York who's been on many times from downstate. Brodsky, same thing. I don't know Kathleen Rice.
My guess, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're all sort of trying to parcel out constituencies and then gin up their
And
they
also
voters.
all have significant resumes. I mean, it has attracted – I mean, I think you're looking at the fact that that job has been a kind of launching pad recently. Well, of course, when the Rockets took off, some of them didn't do so well.
Right.
But,
well, okay. Elliot Spitzer, Andrew Cuomo coming through that position.
Right, but you do see, like, Rice is
And Rice is a serious candidate. She's getting a lot of endorsements from major players.
She's also got a lot of money. She also has the background of having been the Nassau District Attorney. She's also a woman in a race that, you know, and in a statewide contest, the thought is that she's going to attract some support there because of that. But you do have a situation. It's fascinating because they are struggling to differentiate themselves. And one of the things that has gotten not enough attention is one of these things that's come up in the race. I guess Rice was the first one to do this. A lot of these things are held at law schools. I think that probably, you know, 80% of the people voting are going to be lawyers. And at one point, Rice is asked whether or not she will, you know, the job of the Attorney General constitutionally is to defend all of New York State's laws. That's their job. They may not like the law, but they're the chief lawyer for the state. So she was asked, well, would you defend the current ban on gay marriage that exists in the state of New York? And out of nowhere, she says, as an act of conscience, I would not. And I would reserve the right to pick, you know, if I felt that this was not something that was within my moral core, I would not follow through on it. And then a couple of days later, a former insurance superintendent, Eric DiNallo,
another candidate in the race, another guy who has a good reputation, by the way.
But he said the same thing, that he would also reserve for himself the right to decide based on each case presented themselves, the degree to which he would get involved based if it met his moral standards. So that was, to me, something kind of a breakthrough moment. I've never heard of that before in an attorney general contest.
Yeah, I mean, Rice, typically in a Democratic primary, it is a very strong advantage to be a woman because Democratic primary voters tend to be women. But
then how come women couldn't get nominated to anything statewide for year after
Interesting question, right?
Hillary Clinton finally broke that ceiling, right?
But, yeah, I mean, that's sort of, let's try it, right. But, I mean, that's a sort of a complicated, long historical question. Right. But, you know, if you look especially, like, in the city of New York, who votes, you know, tends to be older women. Women live longer than men. However, Kathleen Rice also used to be a Republican, which...
Don't hold that against her.
Well,
just because it's a Democratic primary?
In a Democratic primary, I think that is something that, I mean, I'm sure somebody's going to be raising that point that she was a Republican. In fact, it's so interesting.
Somebody or all of them.
So sensitive is it to be a Republican in the state of New York that I wrote something on the Transportation Nation blog today about Mayor Bloomberg being a Republican. And I promptly got a note from his press office saying, as you know, he is not a Republican. Of course, he's not a Republican. He's an independent. So I put a strike through and said, who has run as a Republican? But you know, I think that it's a sensitive issue.
And the other AG candidate is Sean Coffey, just so we get all the names on the table in the same breath roughly here. But the Kathleen Rice issue is a very interesting issue, and I wonder how much historical precedent there is for it. A state attorney general is supposed to be representing the state, right? It's like Solicitor General, like Elena Kagan, is supposed to be speaking in court for the president of the United States,
right?
The attorney general is supposed to be speaking for the governor or for the state, the position of the state.
I think even more so than Solicitor General. I think Solicitor General, you can represent the White House's position, but if you are
the state's lawyer,
attorney general, you are supposed to represent the laws of the state of New York.
And so in theory, if we take it, you know, ad infinitum, how much chaos would there be if the state attorney general of any state was to decide to pick and choose his or her issues? Oh, I don't like this gay marriage law or whatever it is, so I'm not going to defend it in court when it's challenged, which is in effect what she's saying she would do. In support
what did
Schneiderman
say
rights,
about
right?
that also?
Well, they actually, no, it was DiNallo. It was fascinating.
Just Rice and DiNallo.
Yeah, a very substantial discussion developed.
DiNallo, too.
DiNallo said, had the same take on it. Both Coffey, who was a former U.S. attorney and world-class plaintiff attorney, Brodsky and Schneiderman basically said, listen, you're stuck with the laws as they are. Now, you can be a nuanced attorney and take your client, whether it be the DEC, say the environmental regulator, and take them behind closed doors and say, this is a losing position. I'm your lawyer. I will defend you, but it would be best if you did X. So there's a power to leverage it through convincing and advocating. But once it's showtime and you're in the spotlight, you've got to defend the state.
I think it's there's a lot of things people say in the heat of a campaign in a Democratic primary in which they have to distinguish themselves when they actually are in office.
Right.
They don't necessarily take that position. But could we just, Ozzie, now that you finished eating, now that this is digesting politics, but let's talk about Palladino and Lazio, right?
Oh, my Lord. That they are, I'm actually going to be seeing Mr. Palladino later this evening, if digesting
politics. Just you
and he? I, us, and a few of our favorite Tea Party activists out on Long Island somewhere. So that should be entertaining, I hope.
So he just picked up an endorsement, right, from Genesee County?
Oh, a chairman out there. I mean, Lazio, exactly. I believe it was
just in.
Yeah. No. But what's happening is like the Republican Party is sort of grappling with the issue of like their nominee is a guy who's underfunded, who's sort of lackluster on the campaign trail, and who's struggling to really distinguish himself.
You're talking about Lazio.
Sorry. And who sort of trying to still convince people that he's a legitimate candidate with a different enough agenda from Andrew Cuomo to be a credible alternative to him. Then you have this other guy, Palladino, his own money. There is not one quote that he could say that is too over the top for him. And he's garnering a lot more attention, a lot more enthusiasm. And he's picking off these sort of Republican county chairmen and supporters who aren't reliant on Lazio to sort of carry the ticket for them.
And one of the things I've noticed in the hinterlands, because we tend to always focus on New York City, I was interviewing and trying to get a sense of what's going on in the 19th, the Hudson Valley, where John Hall, Democrat, elected in 2006. That was a big win for Democrats when he took that seat from Sue Kelly. Up there you have Nan Haywood running against Mr. DiCarlo. Nan Haywood is a pro-choice kind of mainstream Republican, very super duper resume ophthalmologist, very successful business person. But you have DiCarlo, who I spoke with last night, who was saying, listen, you know, we are tired as conservatives of going for these rhinos, these pro-choice Republicans.
Republican in name only.
Exactly. And so he's saying
R-I-N-O.
He can't wait to go. It sounds like Palladino's getting traction in rural areas that we may not be paying attention to.
Right. Well. There's always that kind of conversation in a primary or heading towards a general election where.
But especially this year. I mean, this is the time. These are the times we live in, right? With the Tea Party candidates trying to really take the Republican Party away from the mainstream so-called Republicans, and you know, saying that this is how we've got into the budgetary trouble that we're in, and all that because of people like Rick Lazio and you know Rob Simmons who lost to McMahon in Connecticut, et cetera.
Look at even on the conservative side. I mean, Lazio can't even take for granted the conservative nod because they've got an upstate former a chair of the Conservative Party, Lirigio.
Yes, Ralph Lirigio.
Who is now also challenging him for the conservative designation.
So is he facing a situation where he could Rick Lazio could lose both the Republican and conservative?
I mean, it's technically possible.
Is it likely to happen? No. I mean, I don't know how many people are on the conservative line are going to vote for the alternative to Lazio. I'm not even sure how to even pronounce his name. But then again, if you're registered,
now, forgive me for my forgetting this. I can't keep as many facts in my brain as I used to. But isn't Rick Lazio pro-choice? Doesn't he call himself pro-choice?
That's the irritant here. Yes. There's a sense.
There's an issue for him with the conservative. I mean, who votes in a conservative party primary? People who are serious conservatives.
Right. And you also have where the Right to Life party has passed away. That's kind of like in the dustbin of history. But that constituency is still there. And there's also a sense of that seems to be where the intellectual excitement is. To be fair, it's where this whole constitutionalist revival. Exactly.
Yeah. But there's also the party that Palladino is starting himself called what?
Taxpayers USA?
Plural. Oh, no, Taxpayers Party.
Right.
The Taxpayers Party. So even if Lazio wins the Republican primary, is Palladino going to be on the ballot in November anyway?
It depends what day you ask him. Because initially he had said, no, I am not going to do anything that jeopardizes the Republican effort to take out Andrew Cuomo. And then it was taken to be, well, if he loses the GOP primary, he's out of the race, pulls the plug on this new party he's trying to start, which other candidates are now running on that line, which would cause a headache for them. Then he goes on New York One. He makes this pronouncement, which he says he's been saying before. It gets a lot of attention. And a few days later, his campaign spokesman walks it back and says, you know, we're going to reserve our options and figure it out later.
Just knowing Roger Stone as I know him well. Okay, so Roger Stone, let's just remember,
is a Republican consultant.
Nixon tattoo on his back.
He worked for Nixon. He was involved in the so-called riot at the Miami-Dade election headquarters in 2000.
During the Bush versus Gore recount,
he was Tom Golisano's campaign manager when Golisano and Carl McCall were both running against George Pataki. And
called up
he's
Spitzer's
a
dad.
master PR man. I mean, the end of the election, the general election season, he started putting out, Golisano might drop out and turn over to McCall. So this was the only story for the end of the election. And then Golisano went on TV and he said, I'm staying in the race. So Roger Stone, it's hard for me to believe that he is himself not going to want to play a role in the general election. And then that is the only opportunity for Roger Stone to remain a player through November, that he would walk away from that or allow his client to do that.
Well, I want to know what happened to ideological purity on the left. Because we seem to have it on the right, and we were supposed to have it on both parties this year, right? But Blanche Lincoln survived, and now I'm going beyond New York, New Jersey, Connecticut here, but Blanche Lincoln survived her Senate primary in Arkansas after being challenged from the left. Bennett survived his U.S. Senate primary. It's a tale of two Bennetts. Bennett survived his, the Democrat Bennett, in Colorado, but the Republican Bennett in Utah
went down
to a Tea Party candidate. So, you know, Rand Paul won in his state. So we're not even seeing a challenge really against Gillibrand. We're not seeing a challenge against...
Well, we are seeing a challenge. Now somebody's on the ballot. We could talk about that.
But we're not seeing a challenge against McMahon in that Senate, in that Staten Island and Brooklyn...
Primary for the House. Right.
Even though he voted against the health care bill and people said they were going to run him out.
He was called a Judas by some labor activists because of that vote.
Even at the same time that a lot of people, really interesting question.
Can I just add also to your litany,
yes,
which is not
go ahead.
Okay, so the analogy I'm going to acknowledge is imperfect. But let's not forget Ned Lamont, who ran against Joe Lieberman in 2006, this incredibly spirited campaign. I was the guy who stood against Iraq when nobody else did. You should vote for me. And he did so well. He beat Joe Lieberman in the Democratic primary. And in some ways, he was sort of the canary in the coal mine for this whole Obama phenomenon, that being able to say you were against Iraq in a Democratic primary was a plus. Now, Lamont ran a different race. This race was about how he was a successful businessman. But Nevertheless, given his historical residence, and this was only 4 years ago, is this sort of darling of the Democratic left.
But he didn't run as that angry progressive.
It was a different job, too.
Right, but there was—I know it's a complicated analogy,
but
to me,
that
itself is a symbol of the phenomenon that you're describing,
right,
which is that this is not an incredibly powerful force.
Well, even
right.
the press secretary, even right? Obama's press secretary, can pick a fight with the professional left,
as he
and
calls
have it stand and have fun with it.
And yet, all these
are we members of the professional left or
no?
I'm
not.
No,
okay,
no,
all
we're
right,
journalists.
We work for public radio, and can we just say for the record that Charles Rangel told Ozzy that he liked him because of that. What did he say?
Oh, he asked, like, who am I because I keep following him everywhere. So, which is better than...
But then when you said you work for public radio, he...
He said, oh, that's why I like you.
But then
proceeded to ignore my question.
But to finish my point, here are all these disaffected progressives in New York and around the country, because who was Robert Gibbs talking to, after all, but all these disaffected progressives who are losing their enthusiasm for Obama because he's making too many compromises on too many issues. But these disaffected progressives can't even get a primary challenge going
right.
in many places, like the people on the right who are disaffected are being able to do in their party.
But that's been historically going on much longer. I think that the right – there was a kind of sense of elation with the election of Obama. I still think people are in shock about it. I mean, Michael Moore, when he's on the television, the filmmaker, progressive, very strong supporter of Obama, is still at a loss to try to deal with his politics and his concerns, anti-war approach, and twisting himself into pretzel rhetorically to support the president. And that's kind of where people are. They don't want to throw in the towel on him. And then, as Gibbs said cynically, you know, when asked, well, don't you think that maybe the progressives won't turn out? He was like, well, it's too important. The issues at stake, they'll turn out. So there's a kind of take it grant for granted built in.
Right. Well, also, I think it's fair to say that part of the litmus test that does not exist for the left, you have to give part of the credit to Chuck Schumer. When he was head of the Senate, he went out to Pennsylvania and recruited Casey, you know, a pro-life Democrat, to run against Rick Santorum. And When Schumer was the head of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, he went around the country and he found what he said were the best candidates, and that we're not going to have a litmus test, and that we want to win.
It's really true. When with Obama came all of these very centrists Democrats into Congress.
A new pragmatism
right.
that looks
right.
like the old pragmatism.
That are now all struggling to keep their seats.
And now he's losing his base on the left, and he's losing his base among independents. Obama is, but I think that's another show.
Indeed. Are we over now?
No, I want to make sure that Gail Good gets her due, because
yes.
that was my faux pas.
Right.
Gillibrand, the ballot came out this week, and surprise, surprise, after Carolyn McCarthy dropped out, Carolyn Maloney dropped out, Congressman Israel dropped out, even Jonathan Tessini dropped out.
Keep going.
Scott Stringer.
Keep
Caroline
going.
Kennedy.
Harold Ford.
Harold Ford, of course. How could I forget?
They're dropping like flies.
Anybody else we forgot?
The ballot comes out, and Gail Good is on it against
Good is
Gillibrand, Democrat.
Right.
Who is she? Who knows?
Well, she is a former Bronx sister district attorney, very classy website, and really kind of reminding Gillibrand of the Gillibrand of the past. That would be the upstate congressperson who was backed by the NRA, not so great on marriage equality, not so great on immigration issues from the standpoint if you're a progressive. And
this
so
is Congresswoman Gillibrand.
Right. Congresswoman, different person. Quicko, presto, change-o, a different
person
now.
So Gail Good is running against Gillibrand from the right?
No, from the left. Yeah. From the left, and has a very poignant thing.
She's running against Isaac.
Right, and she's saying things like, as an ADA, I examined the damage and the recklessness that happened with illegal guns, and you know, I was on the ground for this. And so she says one thing very poignantly about how the Bronx has been turned around by the influx of undocumented people that is making New York a going concern, reminding people where Gillibrand has been historically in some of these issues.
Right. But I'm just kind of wondering, is it fair to sort of hold her, I don't want to say like hold her accountable, but to press her on the issues she had as a congressperson when sort of overnight she took on a much different constituency when she became a senator? Is it fair to
now's the time, though? If ever there was a time, that's what a primary is about. To Brian's point, actually, there's kind of continuity here. You are a great anchor, because it is to the point
what
of
an
someone
on this show,
but
another eater.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, though? It is kind of like someone, at least this is what the party stands for, at least in some parts of the state, and let's hold this person accountable.
Time for dessert.
All right, we're out.